with solitude, but it usually worked to weaken the bonds between Adam and me, and also between the pack and me. I needed to leave before whoever he decided to send over to guard me arrived, because they certainly wouldn't let me run off on my own. Without bothering to go to my bedroom, I stripped. Setting down the walking stick took more effort, which told me that I'd already convinced myself that it had served to block whoever had been influencing me. I waited, ready to pick up the walking stick again, but there were no more voices in my head. Either they had lost interest because Adam was gone and they'd succeeded in their efforts, or else distance was as much of a factor as I believed. Either way, I would leave the stick behind, because a coyote carrying such a thing would draw too much attention. So I slid into my coyote self with a sigh of relief. I felt instantly safer, more centered in my four-pawed form. Stupid, because I'd never noticed that changing shape interfered with either my mate bond or pack bond in the least. But I was willing to grab onto anything that made me feel better at this point. I hopped through the dog door Samuel had installed in my back door, and out into the night. Outside smelled different, better, clearer to me. In my coyote skin, I took in more information than the human me. I could scent the marmot in her nearby den, and the bats who nested in the rafters of my garage. The month was half gone, and the moon was a wide slice that was orange even to my coyote-color-impaired eyes. The dust of the last of harvest was in the air, and a werewolf in lupine form was approaching. It was Ben, I thought, which was good. Daryl would have sensed my coyote, but Ben had been raised in London and had lived there until a year and a half ago. He would be easier to fool. I froze where I stood, resisting the temptation to drop flat or hide. Motion attracts attention, and my fur is colored to blend in with the desert. Ben didn't even glance my way, and as soon as he rounded the corner, obviously heading toward my front porch, I took off through the sagebrush and dry grass, off into the desert night. I was on my way to the river, to a rock beach where I could be alone, when a rabbit broke out of the brush in front of me, and it was only then that I realized how hungry I was. I'd eaten a lot at dinner. There was no reason for me to be hungry. Not just a little hungry. Starving. Something was wrong. I set that thought aside as I gave chase. I missed that rabbit, but not the next, and I ate him down to the bones. It wasn't nearly enough. I hunted for another half hour before I found a quail. I don't like to kill quail. The way the lone feather sticking up on top bobs in opposition to their heads when they walk makes me smile. And they are silly, without a sporting chance against a coyote, at least not against me. I suppose they can't be that vulnerable, because I'm not the only coyote around, and there are a lot of quail. But I always feel guilty about hunting them. As I finished my second kill, I planned what I'd do to the person who made me so hungry I had to eat quail. A werewolf pack can feed off of any of its members, borrowing energy. I wasn't sure exactly how it worked, though I'd seen it often enough. It's part of what makes an alpha wolf more than he was before he took on that mantle. None of that had ever affected me before I'd become a member of Adam's pack, so I hadn't worried about it. No one had been able to get inside my head and make me think that throwing a bowling ball at a toddler was a good idea, or make me take out my frustration on Adam. Finished and full, I made it to my final destination without further incident. I don't know if anyone owned this little bit of the river. The nearest fence was 100 yards away, the nearest house a little farther than that. There were a few old beer cans scattered around, and if the weather had been a little warmer, I might have run into people. I climbed on the big rock and tried to feel the pack, or Adam. I was alone. Just me, the river. And far up on the Horseheaven Hills, the little lights from the windmill farms. I don't know if it was the distance, or if there was something special about this little bit of ground, but I'd never been able to feel the touch of mate or pack bond here. Thank goodness. Only when I was certain Adam couldn't hear me did I let myself dwell on how creepy it was to have someone else in my head, even Adam, whom I loved. Something I would never, if I could help it, allow Adam to know. Oddly, because Adam had been a wolf for longer than I was alive, I accepted him as a werewolf more easily than he did himself. Knowing that I was freaked out by the greatest gift any wolf could give another wouldn't surprise him as it did me, but it would hurt him, needlessly. I would adjust in time. I didn't have any choice if I wanted to keep him. If I had to deal with only the mate bond between Adam and me, it would be easier. But he'd made me pack, too. And when the link worked as it was supposed to, I could feel all of them there with me. And with that bond, apparently, they could suck energy from me and make me fight with their alpha. Alone in my head, it was easy to look back and see how it had happened. A nudge here, a push there. I would do a great deal to keep Adam from being hurt, but not endanger an innocent. And I have never in my life given anyone the silent treatment. Anyone who offends me deserves to hear exactly how they trespassed, or needs to be lulled into a false sense of security before the sneak attack when they aren't paying attention. But silence had been Adam's ex-wife's weapon of choice. Whoever had worked on me was trying to drive us apart. So who had it been? The whole pack? Part of the pack? Was it deliberate? Or more that the whole pack hated me and was trying to force me away? Most important of all, to me anyway, was how did I stop it from ever happening again? There had to be a way. Doubtless, if a werewolf could influence a pack member as easily as they'd influenced me, alphas would have much tighter control of their packs than they did. A pack would run more like a cult, and less like a bunch of testosterone-laden wild beasts momentarily subdued by the threat of immediate death under their leader's fangs. That, or they'd have killed each other off entirely. I needed Samuel to be home so I could ask him about how things worked. Adam doubtless knew, but I wanted to go into this conversation knowing how to approach him. If Adam thought one of his pack members was trying mind-influencing tricks on me, I wasn't certain what the rules were for something like that. That was one of the things I wanted to find out from Samuel. If someone was going to die, I wanted to make sure I approved, or at least knew about it before I pulled the trigger. If someone was going to die, I might just keep this to myself and create a suitable punishment of my own instead. I'd have to wait until Samuel got back from work. Until then, maybe I'd just keep a good hold on the walking stick and hope for the best. I stayed out on the little rocky beach, watching the river in the moonlight as long as I dared. But if I didn't get back before Ben realized I was gone, he'd call out the troops. And I just wasn't in the mood for a pack of werewolves. I stood up, stretched, and started the long run back home. When I arrived at my back door, Ben was pacing back and forth in front of it uneasily. When he saw me, he froze. He'd started realizing something was wrong, but until he saw me, he hadn't been sure I wasn't there. His upper lip curled, but he didn't quite manage a snarl, caught as he was between anger and worry, dominant male protective instincts, and the understanding that I was of higher rank. Body language, when you know how to read it, can be more expressive than speech. His frustration was his problem, so I ignored him and hopped through the dog door, much, much too small for a wolf, and straight to my bedroom. I changed out of my coyote form, grabbed underwear and a clean t-shirt, and headed for bed. It wasn't horribly late. Our date had been very short, and my run hadn't taken much longer. Still, morning came soon, and I had a car to work on. And I had to be in top form to figure out just how to approach Samuel so he wouldn't tell Adam what I was asking. Maybe I should just call his father instead. Yes, I decided. I'd call Bran. I woke up with the phone in my ear, and thought for a moment that I'd completed the task I'd decided upon before falling asleep, because the voice in my ear was speaking Welsh. That didn't make any sense at all. Bran wouldn't speak freaking Welsh to me, especially not on the phone, where foreign languages are even harder to understand. Muzzily, I realized I could still almost remember hearing the phone ring. I must have grabbed it in the process of waking up, but that didn't explain the language. I blinked at the clock. I'd been asleep less than 2 hours, and about that time I figured out whose voice was babbling to me. "Samuel?" I asked. "Why are you speaking Welsh? I don't understand you unless you talk a lot slower and use small words." It was kind of a joke. Welsh never seems to have small words. "Mercy," he said heavily. For some reason, my heart started beating hard and heavy, as if I were about to get some very bad news. I sat up. "Samuel?" I addressed the silence on the other end of the phone.
"Come, get."
He fumbled the words as if his English were very bad, which it wasn't, and never had been. Not as long as I'd known him, which was most of my 30-odd years of life. "I'll be right there," I said, jerking on my jeans with one hand. "Where?"
"In the X-ray storeroom."
He barely stumbled over that phrase. I knew where the storeroom was, on the far end of the emergency room at Kennewick General, where he worked. "I'll come for you." He hung up without saying anything more. Something had gone very wrong. Whatever it was, it couldn't be catastrophic if he was going to meet me in the storeroom away from everyone. If they knew he was a werewolf, there would be no need for storerooms. Unlike Adam, Samuel was not out to the public. No one would let a werewolf practice medicine, which was probably smart, actually. The smells of blood and fear and death were too much for most of them. But Samuel had been a doctor for a very long time, and he was a good one. Ben was sitting on my front porch as I ran out the door, and I tripped over him, rolling down the 4 steep, unyielding stairs to land on the ground in the gravel. He'd known I was coming out. I hadn't tried to be quiet. He could have moved out of my way, but he hadn't. Maybe he'd even moved into my way on purpose. He didn't twitch as I looked up at him. I recognized the look, though I hadn't seen it from him before. I was a coyote mated to their alpha, and they were darn sure I wasn't good enough. "You heard about the fight tonight," I told him. He laid his ears back and put his nose on his front paws. "Then someone should have told you that they were using the pack bonds to mess with my head." I hadn't meant to say anything about it until I had a chance to talk to Samuel, but falling down the stairs had robbed me of self-control. He stilled, and the look on his body was not disbelief. It was horror. So it was possible. Damn, damn, damn. I'd hoped it wasn't, hoped I was being paranoid. I didn't need this. Sometimes it felt like both the mate and the pack bonds were doing their best to steal my soul. The analogy might be figurative, but I found it nearly as frightening as the literal version would have been. Finding out that someone could use the whole mess to make me do things was just the flipping icing on the cake. Fortunately, I had a task to take my mind off the mess I was in. I stood up and dusted myself off. I had planned on waiting and talking to Adam directly, but there were some advantages to this scenario, too. It would be a good idea for Adam to know that some of the pack were active about their dislike of me, and if Ben told him, he couldn't read my mind to figure out that I wasn't weirded out only by the mind control, but also by the whole bond thing, pack and mate. I told Ben, "You tell Adam what I said." He would. Ben could be creepy and horrible, but he was almost my friend. Shared nightmares do that. "Give him my apologies and tell him I'm going to lie low." Adam would know that meant stay away from the pack, until I get a handle on it. "Right now, I'm going to get Samuel, so you're off duty." Chapter 3 I drove my trusty rabbit to KGH and parked in the emergency lot. It was still hours before dawn when I walked into the building. The trick to going wherever you want unchallenged in a hospital is to walk briskly, nod to the people you know, and ignore the ones you don't. The nod reassures everyone that you are known, the brisk pace that you have a mission and don't want to talk. It helped that most of the people in triage knew me. Through the double doors that led to the inner sanctum, I could hear a baby crying, a sad, tired, miserable sound. I wrinkled my nose at the pervading, sour, sharp smell of hospital disinfectant, and winced at the increase in both decibels and scent as I marched through the doors. A nurse scribbling on a clipboard glanced up at my entrance, and the official look on her face warmed into a relieved smile. I knew her face, but not her name. "Mercy," she said, having no trouble with mine. "So Doc Cornick finally called you to take him home, did he? About time. I told him he should have gone home hours ago, but he's pretty stubborn, and a doctor outranks a nurse." She made it sound like she didn't think that should be the proper order of things. I was afraid to speak because I might thrust a hole into whatever house of cards Samuel had constructed to explain why he had to go home early. Finally, I managed a neutral, "He's better at helping people than asking for help." She grinned. "Isn't that just like a man? Probably hated to admit he trashed that car of his. I swear, he loved it like it was a woman." I think I just stared at her. Her words made no sense to me. Trashed his car? Did she mean he had a wreck? Samuel had a wreck? I couldn't picture it. Some werewolves had trouble driving because they could be a little distractible, but not Samuel. I needed to get to Samuel before I said something stupid. "He's just lucky he didn't get hurt worse," she said, and turned her eyes back to whatever she was writing. Apparently she could carry on a conversation at the same time because she continued. "Did he tell you how close he came? The policeman who brought him in said that he almost fell into the water. And that's the Vernita Bridge, you know, the one on 24 out in the Hanford Reach. He'd have died if he made it over. It's a long way down to the river." What the heck had Samuel been doing all the way out at the bridge on the old highway north of Hanford? That was clear on the other side of the Tri-Cities and then some, and nowhere near any possible route between our house and the hospital. Maybe he'd been running out in the reach, where people were scarce and ground squirrels plentiful. Just because he hadn't told me that he was going out hunting didn't mean he hadn't. I wasn't his keeper. "He didn't say anything about danger to him," I told her truthfully, and followed it with a small lie designed to lead her into telling me more details. "I thought it was just the car." "That's Doc Cornick," she snorted. "He wouldn't let us do anything other than get the glass out of his skin. But just from the way he's moving, you can tell he did something to his ribs, and he's limping, too." "Sounds like it was worse than he told me," I commented, feeling sick to my stomach. "He went all the way through the windshield and was hanging onto the hood of the car. Jack, that's a policeman, Jack said he thought that Samuel was going to fall off the hood before he could get there. The wreck must have dazed Doc because he was crawling the wrong way. If Jack hadn't stopped him, he'd have gone over." And then I understood exactly what had happened. "Honey? Honey, are you okay? Here, sit down." She pulled out a chair when I wasn't watching and held it behind me. My ears were ringing. My head was down between my knees, and her hand was on my back. And for a moment, I was 14 again, hearing Bran tell me what I'd already known. Brian, my foster father, was dead. His body had been found in the river. He'd killed himself after his mate, my foster mother, had died. Werewolves are too tough to die easily, so there aren't many ways for a werewolf to commit suicide. Since the French Revolution pretty much unpopularized the guillotine in the 18th century, self-decapitation just isn't all that easy. Silver bullets have some difficulties, too. Silver is harder than lead, and the bullets sometimes blow right through and leave the wolf sick, in pain, and alive. Silver shot works a little better, but unless rigged just right, it can take a long time to die. If some busybody comes along and picks all the shot out, well, there's all that pain for nothing. The most popular choice is death by werewolf, but that wouldn't be an option for Samuel. Very few wolves would take up his challenge, and those that would... Let me just say, I wouldn't want to see a fight between Samuel and Adam. Even odds aren't what suicidal people are looking for. Drowning is the next most popular choice. Werewolves can't swim. Their bodies are too dense. And even a werewolf needs to breathe. I even knew why he'd chosen the location he had. The Columbia is the biggest river in the area, more than a mile wide and deep, but the three biggest bridges over it, the Blue Bridge, the Suspension Bridge, and the Interstate Bridge, all have two heavy-duty guardrails. There was also a fair bit of traffic on those, even in the middle of the night. Someone is sure to see you go over and attempt a rescue. It takes a few minutes to drown. The bridge he'd chosen instead was not as heavily traveled, and had been built before bridges were designed so that even morons would have a hard time driving off of them. The river is narrower at that point, which means deeper and faster, and the drop-off is impressive. I could see it. Samuel on the nose of the car, and the police officer running up. It had been sheer dumb luck that the only other vehicle on the road was a police car. If it had been an ordinary bystander, he might have been too fearful of his own safety to attempt a rescue, and would have let Samuel drown. But a policeman might just follow him in and try to rescue him. Might put his life at risk for Samuel. No, Samuel wouldn't have fallen once the police officer found him, no matter how much he wanted to. My dizziness was fading. "You be happy," he'd told me when I'd left on my ill-fated date. A wish for my life, and not for the date. The jerk. I felt the growl rise in my throat and had to work to swallow it. "He's all right," the nurse assured me. I pulled my head out from between my knees and noticed on the way up that her name tag read Jody. "We got the glass out, and though he's moving stiffly, he hasn't broken anything major or he wouldn't have lasted this long. He should have gone home, but he didn't want to, and you know how he is. He never says no, but sends you on your way without ever saying yes, either." I knew. "I'm sorry," I told her, standing up slowly so as to give the appearance of steadiness. "It just caught me off guard. We've known each other a long time, and he didn't tell me it was anything near that bad." "He probably didn't want to scare you." "Yeah, he's considerate like that." My aching buddy was considerate. I'd kill him myself, and then he wouldn't have to worry about suicide. "He said he was going to find a quiet place and rest for a minute," Nurse Jody said, looking around as if he ought to appear from thin air. "He said I could find him in the X-ray storage room?" She laughed. "Well, I guess it is quiet in there. You know where it is?" I smiled, which is tough when you're ready to skin someone. "Sure." Still smiling, I walked briskly past curtained-off rooms that smelled of blood and pain, nodding to a med tech who looked vaguely familiar. At least the baby's cries had muted to whimpers. Samuel had tried to commit suicide. I knocked on the storage room door, then opened it. White cardboard file boxes were piled up on racks with a feeling of imposed order, as if somewhere there was someone who would know how to find things here. Samuel sat on the floor, his back against a stack of boxes. He had a white lab coat on over a set of green scrubs. His arms rested across his knees, hands limp and hanging. His head was bowed, and he didn't look up when I came in. He waited until I shut the door behind me to speak, and he didn't look at me then, either. I thought it was because he was ashamed, or because he knew I was angry. "He tried to kill us," Samuel said, and my heart stopped, then began to pound painfully in my chest, because I'd been wrong about the bowed head. Very wrong. The he was talking about was Samuel, and that meant that he was no longer in charge. I was talking to Samuel's wolf. I dropped to the ground like a stone and made damn sure my head was lower than the werewolf's. Samuel the man regularly overlooked breaches of etiquette that his wolf could not. If I made the wolf look up at me, he'd have to acknowledge my superiority or challenge me. I change into a 30-odd-pound predator built to kill chickens and rabbits and poor, silly quail. Werewolves can take out Kodiak bears. A challenge for a werewolf, I am not. "Mercy," he whispered and lifted his head. The first thing I noticed was hundreds of small cuts all over his face, and I remember Jody the nurse saying that they'd had to get the glass out of his skin. That the wounds weren't healed yet told me that there had been other, more severe damage his body had to address first. Nifty. Just a little pain and suffering to sweeten his temper. His eyes were an icy blue just this side of white, hot and wild. As soon as I saw them, I looked at the floor and took a deep breath. "Sam," I whispered, "what can I do to help? Should I call Bran?
No!
The word left him in a roar that jerked him forward until he was crouched on both hands, one leg knee up, one leg still down on one knee. The one knee on the ground meant that he wasn't quite ready to spring on me.
Our father will kill us, Sam said, his voice slow and thick with Welsh intonation. We don't want to make him do that.
He took a deep breath.
And I don't want to die.
Good. That's good, I croaked, suddenly understanding just exactly what his first words to me had meant. Samuel had wanted to die, and his wolf had stopped him. Which was good, but left us with a nasty problem. There is a very good reason that the Morrock kills any werewolves who allow the wolf to lead and the man to follow. Very good reasons, like preventing mass slaughter sorts of reasons. But if Samuel's wolf didn't want them to die, I decided it was better he was in charge. For a while. Since he didn't seem to want to kill me yet. Samuel was old. I don't know exactly how old, but sometime before the Mayflower, at least. Maybe that would allow his wolf to control himself without Samuel's help. Maybe. Okay, Sam. No calls to Bran. I watched out of the corner of my eye as he tilted his head, surveying me.
I can pretend to be human until we get to your car. I thought that would be best, so I held this shape.
I swallowed. What have you done with Samuel? Is he all right? Pale ice-blue eyes examined me thoughtfully.
Samuel, I'm pretty certain he'd forgotten I could do this. It has been so long since we battled for control. He let me out to play when he chose, and I left it to him.
He was quiet a moment or two. Then he said almost shyly,
You know when I'm here. You call me Sam.
He was right. I hadn't realized it until he said it. Sam, I asked again, trying not to sound demanding, what have you done with Samuel?
He's here, but I cannot let him out. If I do, he'll never let me get the upper hand again, and then we will die.
Cannot sounded like never. Never was bad. Never would get him killed as surely as suicide, and maybe, probably, a lot of other people along the way. If not Bran, what about Charles's mate Anna? She's Omega. Shouldn't she be able to help? Omega wolves, as I understand them, are like Valium for werewolves. Samuel's sister-in-law Anna is the only one I've ever met. I'd never heard of them before that. I like her, but she doesn't seem to affect me the way she does the wolves. I don't want to curl up in a ball at her feet or let her rub my belly. Samuel's wolf looked wistful, or maybe he was just hungry.
No, if I were the problem, if I were ravaging the countryside, she might help. But this is not impulse, not desperation. Samuel just feels that he no longer belongs, that he accomplishes nothing by his existence. Even the Omega cannot fix him.
So what do you suggest? I asked helplessly. Anna, I thought, might be able to put Samuel back in the driver's seat. But, like the wolf, I was afraid that might not be a good thing. He laughed, an unhappy laugh.
I do not know. But if you don't want to be trying to extract a wolf from the emergency room, it would be good to leave very soon.
Sam rocked forward to get up and stopped halfway with a grunt. You're hurt, I said as I scrambled up to give him a hand. He hesitated, but took it, and used me to give him better leverage so he could get all the way to his feet. Showing me his weakness was a sign of trust. Under normal circumstances, that trust would mean I was safer with him.
Stiff, Sam answered me. Nothing that won't heal on its own now. I drew upon your strength to heal enough that no one would know how bad the injuries were.
How did you do that? I asked, suddenly remembering the fierce hunger that had resulted in a rabbit and quail dinner on top of the salmon I'd had with Adam. I thought it had been someone in Adam's pack, for the very good reason that borrowing strength was one of those things that came with a pack bond. We aren't pack, I reminded him. He looked directly at me again, then away.
Aren't we?
Unless Samuel's been conducting blood ceremonies when I was asleep, we're not. I was starting to feel panicky, claustrophobic. I already had Adam and his pack playing with my head. I didn't particularly want anyone else in there.
Pack existed before ceremonies, Sam said, sounding amused. Magic binds more obviously, more extensively, but not more deeply.
Did you mess with my head on my date with Adam? I couldn't keep the accusation out of my voice.
No.
He tilted his head, then snarled.
Someone hurt you?
No, I said. It's nothing.
Lies, he said.
Right, I agreed. But if it wasn't you who did it, the incident is something for Adam and me to handle. He was still a moment.
For now, he said.
I held the door open for him, then walked beside him through the emergency room. As we moved through the walkway and out the door, Sam kept his eyes on me, and his regard had a weight to it. I didn't protest. He did it so that no one could see the change in his iris color, but also because when a werewolf as dominant as Samuel meets someone's gaze with his wolf in the fore, even humans bow their knees. That would be pretty awkward and hard to explain. At this point, we were operating with the hope that it would matter to Samuel that he could come back and practice medicine here again. I helped him into the back seat of the rabbit and noticed that the towel-wrapped book was still there. I wished that getting it back to its owner was the extent of my troubles. I grabbed it and put it in the far back out of harm's reach. Hopping in the front, I drove out from under the parking lot lights as soon as I could. It was still the wee small hours, but Samuel was a big man, and it would be hard to miss him stripping in the back of my little car. It didn't take him long to dispose of the clothes and begin his change. I didn't look, but I could tell when he started, because the noises turned from shredding fabric to pained whines. What the wolves go through when they change is one of the many reasons I am very grateful to be what I am instead of a werewolf. For me, the change from coyote to human or back is virtually instantaneous. The side effects are nothing more annoying than tingles. For a werewolf, change is painful and slow. From the grunts he was making, he hadn't yet fully finished his shift by the time I drove into my driveway. Home wasn't the safest place to bring him. No werewolf who saw him would miss what had happened. And Adam's house, visited often by members of his pack, was just behind my back fence. But I couldn't think of any place better. Eventually, we'd have to tell Bran. I knew it, and I suspected that Sam knew it too. But I'd give him what time I could, assuming he didn't go on a rampage and start eating people. That meant keeping him out of sight of Adam and his pack. My pack. My mate and my pack. It felt wrong to hide things from him. But I knew Adam, and one thing he was very good at was honor and duty. It was one of the reasons I'd grown to love him. He was a man who could make the hard choice. Duty and honor would force him to call Bran. Duty and honor would force Bran to execute Samuel. Samuel would be dead, and two good men would suffer as well. Luckily for all of them, my sense of duty and honor was more flexible. I got out of the car and turned in a slow circle. I caught Ben's scent, fading. Otherwise, we were alone with the more mundane creatures of the night, bats, mice, and mosquitoes. The light was on in Adam's bedroom, but it went dark as I was watching. Tomorrow, I'd need to come up with a better place for Sam. Or a good reason to avoid the pack. I opened the back door of the rabbit, keeping it between Sam and me in case he came out of the change in a bad mood. The pain of the change does not make for a happy wolf, and Sam was already hurt when he started. But he seemed okay. When he hopped out, he He waited politely for me to close up the car, then followed me to the door. He slept on the foot of my bed. When I suggested he might be more comfortable in his room, he regarded me steadily with ice-colored eyes. Where does a werewolf sleep? Anywhere he wants to. I thought it would bother me, thought it would scare me. It ought to have bothered me. But somehow, I couldn't work up the energy to be too worried about the big wolf curled up on my feet. It was Sam, after all. My day started out early, despite my late night. I woke up to the sound of Sam's stomach growling. Keeping him fed had attained a new priority level, so I bounced up and cooked him breakfast. And then, because cooking is something I do when I'm upset or nervous, and because it sometimes helps me think, especially if the cooking involves sugar, I indulged myself with a spat of cookie baking. I made a double batch of peanut butter cookies, and while they were in the oven, I made chocolate chip for good measure. Sam sat under the table where he was out of my way and watched me. I fed him a couple of spoonfuls of dough, even though he'd eaten several pounds of bacon and a dozen eggs. He had shared the eggs with my cat, Medea. Maybe that was why he was still hungry. I fed him some of the baked cookies. I was in the middle of putting cookies into baggies when Adam called.
"Mercy,"
he said. His voice was fuzzy with fatigue, his tone flat.
"I saw the light was on. Ben told me what you said. I can help you with that."
Usually, I follow Adam's conversations just fine, but I'd had less than 3 hours of sleep, and I was preoccupied with Samuel, which he could not know anything about. I rub my nose. "Ben." "Oh, Adam was talking about how the pack had screwed up our date. Right." I had to keep Adam away. Just until I figured out some brilliant plan to keep Samuel alive, and here before me was the perfect excuse. "Thank you," I said, "but I think I need a break for a few days. No pack, no..." I let my voice drift off. I couldn't tell him I needed space from him when it wasn't true. Even over the phone he might pick up the lie. I wished he was here. He had a way of making things black and white. Of course, that meant that Samuel should be killed for the good of the wolves. Sometimes gray is the color I'm stuck with.
"You need some distance from the pack and me," Adam said. "I can understand that."
There was a small pause.
"I won't leave you without protection."
I looked down. "Samuel's off for a couple of days." I needed to call before heading to work and get him time off, but that didn't change the fact that he wasn't going to be at work for the next couple of days. The wreck made a convenient excuse. "I'll keep him with me."
"All right."
There was an awkward pause, and Adam said,
"I'm sorry, Mercy. I should have noticed there was something wrong."
He swallowed.
"When my ex-wife decided I'd done something she didn't like, she'd give me the silent treatment. When you did it, it threw me."
"I think that was the point someone was aiming for," I said dryly, and he laughed.
"Yeah, I didn't stop and consider how unlikely a tactic that was from you,"
he agreed.
"Sneak attacks, guerrilla warfare, but not silence."
"Not your fault," I told him before I bit my lip. If I didn't need to keep him away from Sam, I'd have said more, a lot more, but I needed time for Samuel to fix himself. I didn't figure it out until we were almost home.
"If I'd realized something was up while it was still happening, I could have found out who it was,"
said Adam, a growl in his voice. He took a deep breath and let it out. When he spoke again, his voice was calmer.
"Samuel will know how to stop them, too. While he's escorting you around, why don't you ask him to teach you how to protect yourself? Even when it's not deliberate..."
He had to stop again.
"The needs and desires of the pack can influence you quite a bit. It's not too hard to block if you know how. Samuel can show you."
I looked at the white wolf sprawled out on the kitchen floor with Medea cleaning his face. Sam looked back at me with pale eyes ringed in black. "I'll ask him," I promised.
"See you,"
he said, but continued in a rush.
"Is Tuesday too soon?"
It was Saturday. If Samuel wasn't better by Tuesday, I could cancel. Tuesday would be really good. He hung up, and I asked Sam, "Can you teach me how to keep the pack out of my head?" He made a sad noise. Not without being able to talk, I agreed. But I promised Adam I'd ask. So I had 3 days to fix Samuel. And I felt like a traitor for... I hadn't really lied to Adam, had I? Raised among werewolves who are living lie detectors, I'd long ago learned to lie with the truth nearly as well as a fae. Maybe I had time to make brownies, too. My cell phone rang, and I almost just answered it, assuming it was Adam. Some instinct of self-preservation had me hesitate and glance at the number. Brands. The Maroc is calling, I told Samuel. Think he'll wait 3 days? Me either. But I could delay him a little by not answering the phone. Let's go work on some cars. Sam sat in the passenger seat and gave me a sour look. He'd been mad at me since I put his collar on, but the collar was camouflage. It made him look more like a dog. Something domesticated enough for a collar, not a wild animal. Fear brings violence out in the wolves, so the fewer people who are scared of them, the better. I'm not going to roll the window down, I told him. This car doesn't have automatic windows. I'd have to pull over and go around and lower it manually. Besides, it's cold outside, and unlike you, I don't have a fur coat. He lifted his lip in a mock snarl and put his nose down on the dashboard with a thump. You're smearing the windshield, I told him. He looked at me and deliberately ran his nose across his side of the glass. I rolled my eyes. Oh, that was mature. The last time I saw someone do something that grown up was when my little sister was 12. At the garage, I parked next to Z's truck, and as soon as I got out of the car, I could hear the distinctive beat of salsa music. I have sensitive ears, so it was probably not loud enough to bother anyone in the little houses scattered among the warehouses and storage units that surrounded the garage. A little figure at the window waved at me. I'd forgotten. How could I have forgotten that Sylvia and her kids were going to be cleaning the office? Under normal circumstances, it wouldn't have been a problem. Samuel would never hurt a child. But we weren't dealing with Samuel anymore. I realized that I'd gotten used to him, that I was still thinking of him as though he was only Samuel with a problem. I'd let myself forget how dangerous he was. Then again, he hadn't killed me yet. Maybe if he stayed with me in the garage... I couldn't risk it. Sam, I told the wolf who'd followed me out of the car, there are too many people here. Let's... I'm not sure what I was going to suggest. Maybe a run out somewhere no one would see us. But it was too late.
Mercy!
Said a high-pitched voice as the office door popped open with a roar of bongos and guitars, and Gabriel's littlest sister Maya bounced down the short run of steps and sprinted toward us.
Mercy, mercy, guess what? Guess what? I am all grown up. I am going to pretty school, and I...
And that was when she caught a glimpse of Sam.
Ooh,
she said, still running. Samuel is not bad-looking in his human form, but his wolf is pure white and fluffy. All he needed was a unicorn's horn to be the perfect pet for a little girl. Pretty school? I asked, stepping forward into the side so I was between the werewolf and Maya. Maya stopped instead of bumping into me, but her eyes were on the wolf. The next oldest girl, Sissy, who was 6, had emerged from the office a few seconds after her sister.
Mama says you can run out of the office, Maya. There might be cars who wouldn't see you. Hi, Mercy. She means preschool. I'm in first grade this year, and she is still just a baby. Is that a dog? When did you get a dog? Pretty school,
repeated Maya.
And I'm not a baby.
She gave me a hug and launched herself at Sam. I would have caught her if Sam hadn't bounded forward, too.
Pony!
She said, attacking him as if he weren't a scarily huge wolf. She grabbed a handful of fur and climbed on top of him.
Pony! Pony!
I reached for her, but froze when Sam gave me a look.
My pony!
Maya said happily, oblivious to my terror. She thumped her heels into his ribs hard enough I could hear the noise.
Go, pony!
Maya's sister seemed to understand the danger as well as I did.
Mama!
She shrieked.
Mama, Maya's being stupid again!
Well, maybe not as well. She frowned at her sister, and, while I stood frozen, afraid that whatever action I took would be the one that sent Sam over the edge, told me,
"We took her to the fair and she saw the horses. Now she climbs on every dog she sees. She almost got bitten by the last one."
Sam, for his part, grunted the fourth or fifth time Maya's heels hit his side, gave me another look, one that might have been exasperation, and started toward the office, for all the world as if he were a pony instead of a werewolf.
"Mercy?"
Sissy said. I suppose she'd expected me to say something, or at least move. Panic left me with cold fingers and a pounding heart. But as it faded, something else took its place. I've seen any number of werewolves whose wolf had superseded the man. Usually it happens in the middle of a fight, and the only thing to do is to lie low until the man takes back control. The other time it often occurs is with the newly changed wolves. They are vicious, unpredictable, and dangerous even to the people they love. But Sam hadn't been vicious or even unpredictable, except in the best sense of the word, when Maya had hopped up to play Wild Horse Annie. For the first time since I'd walked into that damned hospital storeroom last night, I felt real hope. If Sam the Wolf could keep to civilized manners for a few days, maybe I would have a chance to persuade Bran to give us a little more time. Sam had reached the office door and stood patiently waiting for me to let him in while Maya patted him on the top of his head and told him he was a good pony.
"Mercy, are you okay?"
Sissy looked in my car. I often brought cookies. I'd brought the ones I made this morning out of habit. I usually make a lot more cookies than any one person can eat, so when I have a baking fest, I bring the cookies for customers. She didn't say anything when she spotted the bags sitting on top of the book I still needed to deliver to Finn, but she got a big smile on her face. "I'm fine, Sissy. Want a cookie?" When I opened the office door, which was a faded orangish pink and needed to be repainted, the blaring music was overwhelmed by "Mercy" and "Look, dog!" and what seemed like 100 small bodies piled on us. Sissy put her small fists on her hips and said in a picture-perfect imitation of her brother,
"Barbarians!"
And then she took a bite of the cookie I'd given her.
"Cookie!"
shrieked someone.
"Sissy has a cookie!"
Silence fell, and they all looked at me like a lion might look at a gazelle in the savannah.
"You see what happens?"
asked Gabriel's mother, not even glancing up from scrubbing the counter. Sylvia was about 10 years older than I, and she wore those years well. She was a small woman, delicate and beautiful. They say Napoleon was small, too.
"You spoil them," she told me in a dismissive tone. "So it is your problem to deal with. You must pay the price."
I pulled the two bags of cookies from where I'd hidden them in my jacket.
"Here,"
I gasped, holding them out over the horde's reaching hands toward their mother.
"Take them quick before the monsters get them. Protect them with your life."
Sylvia took the bags and tried to hide her smile as I wrestled with little pink-clad bodies that squealed and squeaked. Okay, there weren't 100 of them. Gabriel had 5 little sisters, but they made enough noise for 10 times that many. Tia, whose name was short for Martina, the oldest girl, frowned at us all. Sam, sitting beside her, had been abandoned for the possibility of a cookie. He seemed amused, more amused when he caught my wary glance.
"Hey, we're doing all the work,"
Rosalinda, the second oldest, said.
"You chicas start scrubbing right this moment. You know you won't get cookies until Mama says."
"Sissy got one,"
Maya said.
"And that is all anyone will get until it is clean,"
proclaimed Tia piously.
"You're no fun,"
Sophia, the middle girl, told her.
"No fun,"
agreed Maya with her bottom lip sticking out. But she couldn't have been too upset, because she bounced away from me to crawl back onto Sam, her fingers clutching his collar.
"My puppy needs a cookie."
Sylvia frowned at Sam, then at me.
"You have a dog?"
"Not exactly," I told her. "I'm watching him for a friend." "For Samuel." The wolf looked at Sylvia and wagged his tail deliberately. He kept his mouth closed, which was smart of him. She wouldn't be happy if she got a good look at his teeth, which were bigger than any dog's I've ever seen.
"What breed is it?"
I've never seen such a monster. Samuel's ears flattened a bit. But then Maya kissed him on the top of his head.
He's cute, Mama. I bet I could ride him in the fair and we would win a ribbon. We should get a dog or a pony. We could keep it in the parking lot.
Maybe he's a Great Pyrenees mix, I offered. Something big.
Abominable snow dog, suggested Tia dryly.
She rubbed Sam briskly under one ear. Sylvia sighed.
I suppose if he hasn't eaten them yet, he won't.
I don't think so, I agreed cautiously. I looked at Sam, who seemed perfectly fine, more relaxed than I'd seen him since I walked into the storeroom at the hospital. Sylvia sighed again, theatrically, her dramatically large eyes glittering with fun.
Too bad. It would be much less trouble if I had a few less children, don't you think?
Mama,
came the indignant chorus. There aren't as many as there seem to be when they are running around shrieking, I told her.
And I've noticed, when they are asleep, they are a little bit cute. It's a good thing, or none of them would have survived this long.
I looked around. They'd already been working for a while. You know, people are going to walk in and turn around and walk back out because they won't recognize the place. Are Gabriel and Zee in the shop?
See, yes, they are. Thank you for the use of your car.
No troubles, I told her. I don't need it right now. And you can do me a favor and tell me about anything you notice is wrong with it.
Besides the steering wheel popping off?
I grimaced.
Yep, I will do so. Now you and that elephant you brought need to go into the shop so my little monsters can get back to work.
Obediently, I lifted Maya off the wolf. Let's go to work, I told him. Sam took two steps with me, then lay down in the center of the office with a grunt. He stretched out on his side and closed his eyes.
Come on, Sit.
I bit my lip. What was the name Samuel kept on his collar? Right.
Come, Snowball.
He opened a single white eye and stared at me. I swallowed. Arguing with dominant wolves could have unpleasant results.
I will watch the puppy, declared Maya. We can play cowgirls and I will teach him to fetch. We shall have a tea party.
She wrinkled her nose.
And then he won't get all dirty playing with the greasy cars. He doesn't like being dirty.
Sam closed his eyes as she patted him on the nose. He wasn't going to hurt her. I took a deep breath. I think he likes the music, I told Sylvia. She huffed.
I think you want him out of your way.
Maya wants to babysit, I said. It'll keep her occupied. Sylvia looked at Sam thoughtfully. She shook her head at me, but didn't fuss when I left him lying there. Zee had shut the door between the office and the shop. He's not fond of Latin music. So when I went in, I closed it behind me, too. Chapter 4 The first thing I heard when I emerged from the bathroom with my working overalls on was Zee swearing in German. It was modern German because I could understand about one word in four. Modern German was a good sign. The Buick was in the first bay. I couldn't see Zee, but from the direction of his voice, he was under the car. Gabriel was standing on the far side of the vehicle. He looked up when he heard me come in, and relief flashed across his face. He knows Zee is, well, not harmless, but that Zee won't hurt him. But Gabriel is too polite, and as a result, he has to put up with a lot more of grumpy Zee than I do. Hey, Zee, I said. I take it that you can fix it, but it'll be miserable, and you'd rather haul it to the dump and start from scratch.
Piece of junk, groused Zee. What's not rusted to pieces is bent. If you took all the good parts and put them in a pile, you could carry them out in your pocket.
There was a little pause.
Even if you only had a small pocket.
I patted the car.
Don't you listen to him,
I whispered to it. You'll be out of here and back on the road in no time. Zee propelled himself all the way under the car so his head stuck out by my feet.
Don't you promise something you can't deliver, he snarled.
I raised my eyebrows and said in dulcet tones, Are you telling me you can't fix it? I'm sorry. I distinctly remember you saying that there is nothing you can't fix. I must have been mistaken, and it was someone else wearing your mouth. He gave a growl that would have done Sam credit and pushed himself back under again, muttering,
Deine Mutter war ein Kohleautomat.
Her mama might have been a pop machine, I said, responding to one of the remarks I understood, even at full Z speed. Your mama sounds the same in a number of languages. But she was a beauty in her day. I grinned at Gabriel. We women have to stick together.
Why is it that all cars are women? He asked. Because they're fussy and demanding, answered Z.
Because if they were men, they'd sit around and complain instead of getting the job done, I told him. It was a relief to do something normal. In my garage, I was in control. Well, Z was really in charge when he came in. Even though I bought the shop from him and now paid him to come in, we both knew who was the better mechanic. And he'd been my boss for a long time. Maybe, I thought, handing him sockets size 10 and 13, that was the real relief. Here I had a job I knew how to do and someone I trusted giving me orders, and the result would be a victory for goodness and order. Fixing cars is orderly, unlike most of my life. Do the right thing, and it works. Do the wrong, and it doesn't.
Verdammte Karre, Z growled. Gib mir mal.
The last word was garbled as something heavy went thump, thump, bang.
Give you what?
I asked. There was a long silence. Z? Are you all right? The whole car rose about 10 inches off the jacks, knocking them over on their sides, and shook like an epileptic. A wave of magic rose from the Buick, and I backed away, one hand locked in Gabriel's shirt so he came with me as the car returned all the way to the ground with a bang of tires on pavement and the squeak of protesting shocks.
I feel better now, said Z in a very nasty tone. I would be even happier if I could hang the last mechanic who worked on it.
I knew that feeling. Ah, the unparalleled frustration of mismatched bolts, miswired sending units, and cross-threaded parts left for me to discover. Things that turned what should be a half-hour job into an all-day event. Gabriel was pulling against my hold as if he wanted to get farther from the car. His eyes were wide, the whites showing all the way around his irises. I realized belatedly that it might be the first time he'd seen Z really work.
It's okay. He's through now, I think.
I let go of Gabriel's shirt and patted his shoulder.
Z, I think the last mechanic who worked on it was you. Remember? You replaced the wiring harness.
Z rolled out head first again, and there was a black grease mark running from his forehead to his chin where something had rolled across his face. A spot of blood lingered on his forehead, and there was a lump on his chin.
You may shut up any time you choose, Kindlein, he advised me sharply.
Then he frowned.
I smell cookies, and you look tired. What is wrong?
I made cookies, I told him. I saved a bag in the car for you to take home. I brought more with me, but the hoard is in possession.
Gut, he said. Now what is robbing you of sleep?
He used to leave me alone. But ever since I'd been hurt, he coddled me in his own way.
Nothing you can help me with, I said.
Money?
Nope.
He frowned, his white eyebrows lowering over his cool gray eyes.
Vampires?
He snapped it out. Z didn't like vampires much.
No, sir, I saluted his tone. Nothing you can do anything about.
Don't you sass me, girl.
He glowered at me. One of Gabriel's sisters screamed. I had a terrible vision of Sam chewing on one of the kids, and I was running. I had my hand on the door, and the door mostly open when Tia shouted,
Mama, mama, una pistola, tiene una pistola.
Inside the office, there were kids all over, hanging from shelving, standing on the 6-inch sill at the bottom of the big window, on the floor, wrapped around Sam. A man, a huge man with a nasty-looking automatic and a steady two-handed grip, stood in the doorway between the outside and the office, holding the door open with one black leather-booted foot. The rest of him was dressed in black, too, with some sort of bright yellow design on the left shoulder of his leather pseudo-military jacket. The only outlier in his generally soldier-of-fortune appearance was the shoulder-length silver-threaded red hair, flowed from his head in a manner that would have done credit to a romance novel cover model.
Just behind him, I caught a glimpse of another man dressed in a button-up shirt and slacks. But the second man's body language told me at a glance that it was only the first man, the man with the gun, who was a threat. The second man held something on his shoulder, but beyond determining that it wasn't a weapon, I ignored it and him to focus on the dangerous one. Sylvia held a broom in her hand, but she was frozen, because the barrel of the gun was aimed right at the littlest Sandoval. Maya was locked onto Sam with both hands and screaming Spanish in a manner that might